Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
Hey, thanks a lot for tuning in tonight. Oh, yeah, getting you ready for the Labor Day rematch tomorrow. 5 o'clock at Commonwealth Stadium. Our coverage starts with the countdown to kickoff at 3:30. Football tonight, we got Toronto leading Hamilton 14-7. That is at halftime. The triple header in the CFL tomorrow. That's going to be fun. So the 2 o'clock game will be Sask at Peg, then Calgary at Edmonton, Ottawa at BC will be the nightcap. BC heavily favored to win that one. Ottawa not looking very good. They got that win here against the Elks, but I don't think they're a very good team overall. I mentioned the Blue Jays before the break. They are trailing the Orioles 3-1. That one now into the top of the sixth. The tennis story today is the Canadian Felix Auger-Aliassime is out straight sets, beaten by Medvedev. And the other men's semifinal is on the court. It is one set apiece between Djokovic and Zverev, and it's 2-2 in the third set. So that is shaping up to be a long one. Tomorrow, 2 o'clock Mountain Time, Leila Fernandez, the young Canadian, will try to cap it off. What a run at the U.S. Open. And to discuss that and more, former Canadian tennis star used to reside right here in Edmonton, Helen Kelesey is checking in. Helen, you're on with Reed. How are you doing?
Oh, hey, Reed. I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you for making time to come on the show. This is awesome to talk to you. We got to speak briefly this afternoon, and you reminded me of your very strong connections to the city of Edmonton. So remind people about your tenure as an Edmontonian and some of the highlights for you.
Well, you know, I used to, I was 13 when I moved there from Vancouver. So I was actually going to the same high school as Wayne Gretzky. And my father actually was teaching Wayne some tennis lessons. So that was a lot of fun because I got to meet him. And then eventually I was Mike Barnett. I met Mike Barnett, and then eventually he became my agent. So I have some really great ties and wonderful memories of Edmonton.
And where did you used to train and play tennis when you were here?
I think the club was called the Mayfield. I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. Yeah, I think Mayfield Tennis Club, I think it's still there. Somebody might have to help me out.
The Mayfield Tennis Club. It had a dinner theater, and it had ice rinks and, you know, some very nice tennis courts there.
Yeah, that's awesome. So your journey to becoming an elite tennis player and a pro tennis player, like when did it really kick in for you? Because, you know, a lot of young people, a lot of teens can be really, really good at a sport. But, I mean, to wind up doing something professionally, that's, you got to be the elite of the elite. What were some of the key steps in that journey for you?
Well, you know, part of it was being able to play some international junior tennis events. And, you know, like Leila Fernandez, you know, I played the Junior French Open, Junior Wimbledon, Junior U.S. Open, which happens in the second week of the actual professional tournament. And, you know, I got to the semifinals of the Junior French Open, and that kind of opened up my eyes. Go, wow, I could really make it into the pros, because I was right there on the same practice courts and same playing on the same courts that they were playing. And I think that this is really a big, very important step, because it gives you the belief. And, you know, 2 years ago, Leila Fernandez won the Junior French Open, and she really feels like she belongs out there. I mean, she's beating the number two and number three players in the world.
I want to ask you, of course, about Leila, but just a couple more questions about your journey. Your dad, Milan, was your coach.
That's
was
right.
Was that easier when you were a teenager or when you were in your 20s to have your dad as a coach? Was it always, I assume it wasn't always smooth sailing.
You know, the tennis parents and fathers especially, you know, they're very important. And he played a huge role in my career. And, you know, it was, I want to say it was an emotional roller coaster, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do it without him. But you hear about a lot of tennis fathers out there. Hey, he was calm. I was the one that was feisty and fiery. he put me in my place.
You made, if I have my stats right, you made 10 appearances at the U.S. Open.
Yes.
What's that atmosphere like? I mean, there's a lot of, and I think you were in the tournament the year, and I know this was on the men's side of the draw, but Connors had his late career run in 91 and had everybody going crazy.
I was out there watching some of his matches.
Yeah, so what was it like for those matches? He just had the crowd completely behind him.
He played them so well, but he was 38 years old. How could you not root for him? But coming down back from two sets down and winning, I think I was there at watching in the stadium when he beat Patrick McEnroe, John McEnroe's brother, and he was down 2-0, and he came back and won in 5 sets. And I think I left the stadium at like 1:30 in the morning. It's just electric out there. It's like no other. Each Grand Slam has their own personality, but you know, New York doesn't sleep. It's crazy there. The amount of energy, it's electric.
So is that at all difficult for a player? I mean, you know, even during the match today, I heard the umpire having to say, hey, like, you know, please quiet down. And last night during Layla's match, or as a player, was you like, no, like, I don't care. Like, yell when I'm serving. This gets me fired up.
Well, no, it's very distracting. And if you're on the outside courts, like this is in a stadium, you know, 14,000 people, but there are other matches going on the outside courts. There's 20 other courts, and they don't have the stadium. They have just a couple of stands there, and it is so noisy because people are popping their beers, eating chips, talking on their phone, and you know, they come there for the entertainment, but that's not the only thing they come there for. So it's so loud and distracting. And if you're by the food court, you see the smoke coming from the hot dogs and the burgers crossing your court, and you know, the garbage is on the other side, and the smell, like, it's just, it's a craziness, but it's, you know, you have to love it. You feel alive, so, kind of out there.
Very New York experience for sure. Helen Kellissey joining us tonight on Inside Sports, former Canadian tennis player, former Edmontonian, and talking about her career and, of course, about the magic of Layla Fernandez. I'm going to ask you from this point of view, when you watch Layla, or I guess any tennis match, do you evaluate, you know, their technique, their forehand, backhand, or is it all about how are they handling the emotion? How are they riding the ups and downs of the match?
I think it all comes to, it's all the same thing. You know, so when I watch Layla, you know, I can, I kind of feel her calmness and her fierce, positive attitude too. Like, she is a cool cat out there. And I can feel her hitting the ball. It's so clean and so early that it's thrilling to watch her. But yeah, I do watch her technique. I look at her footwork. I look at her whole mental attitude and the energy. And, you know, whenever she gives her fist pump into the air, that means she wants the crowd to start cheering for her. It's so graceful. It's quite a, I'm very, very impressed. Very impressed.
I want to get your perspective too on Canadian tennis. And obviously, you know, you had a great career, you know, Carling Bassett is a name I remember from the past. You know, Daniel Nestor has been a good player, but I was looking at the U.S. Open draw back to the very beginning, and there were some other Canadians eliminated early that I didn't even realize were in the tournament. You know, I mentioned Ogier Aliassime, that Layla's opponent tomorrow is not Canadian, but was born in Canada. And right. Obviously Bianca won a couple of years ago. So it's Shapovalov, I didn't even mention. I mean, he's been outstanding. What's happened? Like, are these the generations that you and some of your contemporaries laid the groundwork for, that now we're much better at tennis, or where has it come from in your mind?
Well, you know, when I started playing, you know, kind of Carling Bassett was, you know, she kind of set the path because she reached the top 10. And so for me, I got to see her. I got to see her in front of me and go, hey, I can do that too. I was inspired. You know, she was only a couple years older than me. And at that time, when I was a junior, you know, we had Grant Connell, Glenn Michibata, Andrew Schneider, and we all played the juniors together. We all played the Canadian Nationals, and then we were all on tour together. And so we kind of grew, we grew together. It was very nice, especially when the women got to play at the same tournament as the men, because then we could really feel each other there. You know, it really makes a difference. I think that what Bouchard did and how, what she reached, you know, also opening the eyes for the Canadians to, hey, I can do that. I can be there. I can relate, you know. And the way that Bianca and Dennis and Felix, those three, the way they grew up and trained together, they are all very close with each other. So now you see Layla, like, yeah, I think it makes a big difference of those people that are in front of us. You know, Posh Basile, Milos, you know, we got some really fantastic tennis players. And even when I played back then with Jill Hetherington was the number one doubles player in the world. You know, we had Renee Simpson who got to, I think, top 50, you know, so it makes a difference.
Helen, we're going to have to do this again, and we'll have to schedule a little more time. This was awesome catching up with you and getting your perspective on Leila Fernandez. Before I let you go, though, let people know what you're up to these days.
Oh, well, I'm teaching right now at the Richmond Country Club in Richmond, B.C., and I'm, you know, my passion is tennis. It's in my DNA, so I'm creating, I hope, a bunch of new future champs.
That's awesome. Helen, thanks for checking in here on Inside Sports. Enjoy the match tomorrow. Let's for sure do this again soon. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Bye, Reed.
That is Helen Kelesey on Inside Sports tonight. Yeah, she had a pretty good career, 1985 to 1987 approximately, and now coaching the next generation of athletes. And well, like all of us, going to be cheering for Layla tomorrow afternoon. Canadian Derby preview next on Inside Sports. Okay, thanks a lot for tuning in. Century Mile tomorrow hosting the Canadian Derby. It's expected to start around 7:50, and I am pleased to welcome to Inside Sports the trainer for Myopic, one of the favorites in the race, Robertino Diodoro, is on the line. Robertino, you're on with Reed. How are you doing, sir?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for checking in. Myopic, tell us a little bit about this horse.
Well, he's a horse that we haven't had for a long time, but we bought him roughly a couple months ago out of Fast and Tippett's sale in Kentucky. Kind of a rush job into the Manitoba Derby. Ran a decent second and went back to Minnesota and trained the last month there and has arrived here in Edmonton on Monday.
Okay. The Derby has been good to you. You have won, one of your horses that you've trained has won four of the last eight Canadian Derbies. What is it about you in this race?
It's just, it's every trainer that has been born or raised in Alberta, they've, you know, it's the Stanley Cup of horse racing here in Alberta, and, you know, I've been really fortunate to have some, you know, owners really support me and want to win it just as bad as I do. You know, we've been fortunate enough to pick the right horses and, you know, bring up some good horses for the race.
Okay. Your story is an interesting one because you are, as you mentioned, you know, you grew up in Alberta, but the sport of horse racing has taken you to various locations. Tell us about kind of that, I hope I'm phrasing this the right way, but that journey up through the ranks of being a trainer in Alberta and where it's taken you since.
Yeah, no, I born and raised in Calgary, and first started training out at Trout Springs, a track that used to be east of Calgary, and Stampede Park, Northlands, Lethbridge, and roughly 2010, started heading down to Turf Paradise in the winter, and slowly branched off into Southern California to Santa Anita and Del Mar, and now over to the East Coast, New York and Kentucky, Louisiana, Texas, and our home base now is in Hot Springs, Arkansas, Oaklawn Park. So it's been quite the journey, and it's been a lot of fun.
And was it Keep Me In Mind, the horse you had in the Kentucky Derby this year?
Yes, yeah, Keep Me In Mind. He ran in the Kentucky Derby and ran in the Preakness, and his last start was in the Travers in Saratoga.
All right, so you literally have horses all over, and that's so cool that even though you've gone to different parts of Canada and the States, that it's still important for you to put a horse here in the Canadian Derby. So that'll be a big one tomorrow. 11 horses tomorrow, and you mentioned myopic is relatively new to you. So as a trainer in a relatively short time frame, what are some of the biggest impact you can have on a horse like myopic and how he's able to compete tomorrow?
Well, a couple things. The one thing, the horse was a little bit on the light side when we got him, and that could have been just going through the sale and some traveling and stuff. And he's definitely put on some weight over the last month, and we changed up a couple things on his equipment for race day, and he's worked. His last couple works have been tremendous, so we're pretty excited about tomorrow. And the old saying, you need some racing luck, so hopefully we can get lucky.
Right on. Okay. Well, Robertino, thanks for coming on the show. I know it's busy for you the night before the big race, but thanks for checking into Inside Sports. Thanks for telling some of your story. We'll have to have you on again, and maybe we can dive into a little more detail, but we really appreciate it. All the best.
No, thanks for having me. You guys have a great night.
Right on. That is Robertino Diodoro, trainer for Myopic, the 92nd running of the Canadian Derby tomorrow. So the racing card starts at around 2:50. The Derby scheduled to go at around 7:50. And Infinite Patience, the horse owned by Ryan Nugent Hopkins, is in the Northlands Distaff. That's supposed to start at around 6:15. Back after the news and weather, Inside Sports on Chet. The rematch of the series in Ontario is a little bit surprising to this point. 2.5 minutes left in the third quarter. Argos leading the Tiger Cats 17-7. Argos jumped out to a 14-0 lead in that game. We'll see if they can hang on. The Tiger Cats beat them pretty bad in the Labor Day game on Monday. The Blue Jays trying to keep their winning streak going. Well, they fought back. They were down 3-0 early. Now in the seventh, Jays and Orioles are tied 3-3. We'll keep you updated on that one. I mentioned Felix Auger-Aliassime, the Canadian, in the men's semis at the U.S. Open, lost in straight sets this afternoon to Daniel Medvedev, 6-4, 7-5, 6-2. The other semi, Djokovic and Zverev on the court right now, a set apiece, and Djokovic leads the third set 5-4. So there you go. And we were talking about the Canadian Derby as well. That was cool to have Robertino Diodoro on the show, trainer for Myopic, one of the favorites tomorrow. And Robertino has had the Derby winner in 4 of the last 8 years. He also had another winner wind up being disqualified. So he's had the first horse to the finish line 5 of the last 8 years, but it did not stand up in one of those years. But pretty awesome career for Diodoro. That was nice to speak to him. Okay, well, I'm glad to welcome this gentleman back to Inside Sports. His appearances were wiped out last year by the pandemic, but he is always a welcomed contributor to Inside Sports, even though he is from Calgary, which I know already you have listeners against you, Greg. There's probably people booing your radios saying, why is Wilkins having this guy on? We only want to know why the Stamps are bad. We don't want to hear anything else. We'll see. It's Greg Peterson on the line. How are you doing, buddy?
Good. It's always good to talk to you, Reed. I'm only on because of you, by the way. So.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Thank you very much. No, it is good to catch up. I've always enjoyed our chats, whether they be about Labor Day or other things going on with the Stamps or in the Canadian Football League. I was thinking, though, like Trent Brown and James H. Brown, now the title sponsor of Inside Sports. Trent Brown's been on the show a few times, and you went into law as well. Like, what is it? If you're a Canadian defensive back, you got to go into law when you're finished, or what?
Well, I don't know, but it's been great for me. I've been practicing law now for 30 years, and with a very good law firm, Gowling WLG. So, you know, it was good for me, but you have to sacrifice a lot in order to get your law degree while you're playing. So if Trent did that, I got a lot of accolades for him because I know what I had to go through and my family. So good on him.
And did you work on it during your career as well?
I did. It took me 6 years to finish my law school because normally it takes 3 years, but I just went in the off season, and I went to a school in California, a very good school that permitted me to do that. And then you have to article, and that normally takes a year. It took me 2 years. So for me to get my law degree, I had to move 12 times in 6 years with a wife and two kids. And, you know, it was a big sacrifice. While all my buddies were in Hawaii in the off season having a good time, I was down in the dungeons of a law library studying law books. But it turned out to be a very good profession for me for a number of reasons. I'm still involved in minor football in a number of ways in Calgary, sit on a lot of boards, and, you know, it's been a great profession for me.
It must have been interesting, though, for your fellow students, you know, when you'd meet new people at the start of a semester or a new year. Hey, Greg, so what was your summer job? Oh, like, I'm actually a pro football player.
Yeah, and my last year I transferred to Calgary just to take classes at the U of C, and I did it a little bit while I was playing. I took one class, constitutional law, while I was playing my last year, and I remember one game we played in Saskatchewan, and that time Saskatchewan's turf was brutal, and you got lots of turf burns, and I remember I had turf burns all over and bandages on my elbows and my knees, so I had to wear shorts, and I walked in, I remember the prof saying, "You must have really burned yourself bad in a fire. Come up and tell the entire class what happened." So I had to do that. But you know what? It was I encourage any CFL player to continue to get their education or a trade, because we all know you don't make money in the CFL like they do in the NHL or other pro sports to live off of or retire. So I always encourage any CFL player to do something in the offseason to protect themselves for the future.
Well, and you got to have money aside, and of course, hey, more money's nice, but money aside, I mean, you got to have something to do with your life when you're 30 or 35. I mean, that's the interesting journey of a pro athlete, and I'm not asking, you know, anybody to have sympathy for you or anybody else, because of course, being a pro athlete is a great life, but still, I mean, it often ends at a time when a lot of us are just getting our careers going and really getting established, and then there's sort of that start over period for an ex-player who might be 28, 32, 36, whatever.
You're definitely behind. When I was in law school, by the end of my law school, I was, you know, like 32, 33 years old, and most of the people in my class graduating were in the 24, 25-year-old category. But, you just have to do it. Too many CFL players just don't think of their future. At least in my day, they did. I think with the CFLPA harping on it, a lot more players are understanding you have to get yourself ready for the future. But, you know, even NFL players, my roommate on the road, I've talked to you about this when I played in college at BYU, was Steve Young. And Steve Young went to law school. He went to law school because I told him he should go to law school. And he called me up and said, "I understand you're going, and how do you do it?" And you got to credit him. He was making something like $12 million a year at the time, but he went on and got his law degree. Now, he doesn't have to use his law degree because he's rich. I had to use mine because I'm not rich.
Well, you guys both went into broadcasting too, which is pretty cool.
But, yeah, Steve never practiced law, but he just always wanted to get his law degree. I roomed with him on the road, and I would be studying to get good grades, and he kind of said, "You know what, I think I'll do that." And you got to credit him for doing that, but CFL players should take care of themselves in the off season for a future career.
Yeah, absolutely. Greg Peterson joining us tonight on Inside Sports, former Calgary Stampeder, now the color analyst for Stamps Football on News Talk 770. That's our sister station in Calgary. Okay, let's quickly look back to Monday. I'll ask you the simple questions, and we'll see if it is that simple in your mind or if you want to dig a little deeper. Stamps offense, was it just drop balls, or was there more to them not scoring a little more?
You know what? They didn't play very well. That broadcasting all their games, obviously, they played very well against Winnipeg the game before that. And even the prior games, that was their worst game. Drop balls really hurt, but they're a young team. I look at their secondary, which the Elks just killed them last game with those three deep balls. The most veteran person in their secondary is a second-year player. So they're young, inexperienced, and they're going through a lot of growing pains. And their offense, they're making mistakes at the wrong time. But the Elks certainly were a heck of a lot better football team in the Labor Day Classic. I mean, I'm hoping that turns around, but I could just see the experience that the Elks have come out when the inexperience the Stampeders have. This game might be different, though, with Bo Levi Mitchell back at quarterback.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about Bo, but I'm glad you touched on the Stamp secondary as well, because I certainly noticed that. I mean, the deep shots from the Elks, and I thought even some other plays where, you know, Calgary blitzed, and I think on one play, Harris hit Walker hot, and he didn't just complete it. Then he also had room to run for the first down. I think there was another quick slant that they hit when Calgary blitzed. So, you know, it was just it seemed like the cushion was often there, either deep or underneath for the Elks receivers.
Good point, Reed, because I thought they played, the defensive backs of Calgary played tentative. They played too cautious, gave way too much cushion. And I've been there. When you're blitzing and you know you haven't got free safety help, or you haven't got your Mac or your middle linebacker help, you kind of like grab a yard or two because you don't want to get beat deep. And Trevor Harris, being the experienced quarterback he is, he was just hitting those passes. It was just pitch and catch. It was right in front. And then I don't think they really respected or understood, is the proper term, the speed of the Elks outside guys. I mean, the Elks have, you know, Walker and Edwards are two very fast, two outside receivers, and they just blew by Stampeder corners for those big bomb, three of them, for touchdowns. And, you know, that was the game in my mind.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned Bo Levi is coming back. Eddie Steele and I talked about him earlier. Eddie Steele, you're probably going to love this, and maybe this will heat up the Edmonton-Calgary rivalry a little bit, but Eddie said Bo Levi is certainly can play with some arrogance, and he said that's putting it mildly, but hey, if you're a teammate, you probably like that. What do you think Bo's biggest impact is going to be? And of course, we talked about the drops and maybe this year's Calgary team as a whole not being as mighty as some of the past squads, but what do you see Bo's impact tomorrow?
Well, just his experience and the fact that he has been the best quarterback in the CFL some of the years throughout his career. And, you know, there were a couple of plays that Jake Mayer, who played very well, I thought, in all the games he started in. But there were a couple of quick hot routes where he fired the ball quite a bit and our receivers didn't catch it. Bo will have more of the touch. And Bo's just got that experience, plus just being the veteran vocal person in the locker room. Right now, this Stampeder team are, as I indicated, they're young and they're growing, and they just don't have that voice in the locker room right now to get guys going or whatever. To have Bo back on the bench is really going to help.
All right. You obviously played on Labor Day. I'm just double-checking. There was not always a rematch in your career. I think it was more towards the end of your career. They started doing the Monday-Friday thing. Now it's Monday-Saturday. What kind of a toll was that on your body to have to play with just 3 days off? I mean, did you even go on the field or do much in between games?
Back when I played, we did, because we had coaches that were a little bit archaic in their thinking. And yeah, we always have a day ahead. Now they don't do it. They're a little bit smarter in that regard. But you know what? I never minded it. I always liked it because you got paid after each game, and that means you got a paycheck pretty quick coming. but you know what? Yeah, some of the it did take its toll. You know, I noticed it more the latter part of my career when you know, my 8th and 9th and 10th year, when things really got, you know, you're older and your body takes longer to heal from the previous game. The first part of my career, yeah, we didn't do it, but I think for the older guys, it does. A week in between games is better. And not only that, a lot of football players just like routine. So they like to have, okay, the day after, 2 days before, 3 days before. This week is a little bit different. It's throwing you off your routine. And so a lot of players might not like that. But you know what? I love the fact that they have the back-to-back, the Labor Day Classic, then come up to Edmonton. This is kind of your Labor Day Classic. I hope they never don't do it, because I just think it's a great thing for the CFL and a super great thing for both the Elks and the Stampeders.
I'm looking at the Labor Day back-to-back in 1991, September 2nd and September 6th. Calgary won on Labor Day 48-36. Edmonton won the rematch 51-37. Like, what, did you guys just dress 8 men on defense? Those two.
Well, and you know, another kind of new element of this back-to-back is which coaching staff can adjust to the other, which players can. I think it's to the advantage of the team that lost the second game. They just got that more oomph, momentum, whatever, and they're willing to adapt more, where the team that wins maybe want to continue to do what they did. The other team now is a little bit more prepared. So, yeah, we had some great Labor Day matches, though, and some of my fondest memories as a player are Labor Day.
Yeah, and I mean, I should reference for people, 1991, if it's not the highest scoring season in CFL history, it'd be up there. I think there were some crazy scores. That I think a couple teams scored 60 throughout that year as well. Greg, thanks for checking in. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I always love hearing the stories about your law career in the early days as well, and thanks for your perspective on what the Stampeders are going to bring tomorrow, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, and I always look forward to going to Commonwealth. It's a beautiful stadium, and it's a great rivalry, and thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Right on. That is Greg Peterson, color analyst for Stamps Football on News Talk 770 in Calgary, former defensive back for the team as well. Yeah, I used that Sharp Sports site I mentioned earlier. So the first year of the back-to-back was 1989. It was September 4th on Labor Day, September 8th, the Friday back in Edmonton. The Double E won both 31-14 and 38-27. They swept again in 1990, 38-4, and then 34-17. And then I mentioned in 91, it was a Labor Day win for Calgary, and then Edmonton won at home. It doesn't look like they had the back-to-back, though, in 92. And I know there's a couple of years it's been missed. And, of course, in the process of searching for this, and I'm sure some of you remember this, the one time, oh, now I lost it. It was, yeah, in 1981, the game was not on Labor Day. They played at Calgary on Saturday, September 19th. That was the last time there wasn't a Labor Day Classic. Anyway, 7:49, we got to call a quick timeout. It's Inside Sports on Chet.
Paying attention to the standings, not so much, but understanding where we're at with a rival team and where they're at, it is a big deal. And I think they know that too. And so I think that's going to affect, you know, their energy and the way that they come out swinging. They're going to be aggressive, and but so are we. And so, like I said, I think this is going to be a great one, because two teams are, you know, one's trying to get a first win at home, and one team is trying to prevent getting in a big time hole. And so, this is a big one.
That is quarterback Trevor Harris. The Elks are sitting at 2-2. The Stampeders 1-4. Man, oh man, if Harris is right. The Elks can push them into a big hole with a win tomorrow. Countdown to kickoff at 3:30 here on 6:30. Chet, the game starts at 5. Weather looks good. Should be 18 around kickoff and stay in the high teens for most of the game. Maybe a little bit of rain earlier in the day, but that should be done by 2:00. Now, maybe you're listening to me talk about the weather thinking, whoa, where's Reed getting this information? Is he talking to Halsey's guy? Has Halsey's guy become Reed's guy? Does Reed have his own guy? Is Halsey sitting there like, hey, hold on a second. You can't have a guy. I got a guy. Don't worry. I'm using the Environment Canada app. I don't have a guy. I'm sure Halsey's guy is telling him. So I talked to Halsey this afternoon, Kellen. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. How's he doing?
Yeah, I had to call Halsey. It was great. It was great to talk to him. I love talking to Halsey. Yeah, he was awesome.
Right on.
He's always interesting. That was good. But no, I don't have a guy. I have the Environment Canada app. Should be good weather for the game. Maybe you have to wear a light jacket or something, but it'll be pretty good. Jamie Elizondo, the coach of the Edmonton Elks. He was asked, is the second game of the back-to-back tougher on the team who won the first game?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think those back-to-backs, whether across the league, are always difficult because of that, because you never want to lose two. You never want to lose two to a division rival. It sets you back in the standings. So I think there's urgency. On the flip side of it, we focused on the opportunity to create some separation. If we do the things that we're supposed to do, we come out. I think it all starts with your intensity level. I think the games are such a peak emotionally. Everybody's always said the CFL season starts, on Labor Day and the Labor Day weekend. So I think there's a lot of amp up leading to those games. And I think there's naturally sometimes a letdown on the team that won the first one and an urgency on the team that lost one. So I think that's going to be one of the keys of the game, is make sure that we are operating with a full tank of gas and really operating with an edge that's we need to set the standard for what that edge and that intensity level is going to be in this game.
All right, looking forward to it. Again, 3:30 for the countdown to kickoff here on 6:30, Chet. The game will start at 5. Final look at the scoreboard here before we go. Now 17-10 for the Argos leading the Tiger Cats. That one with 9:20 left in the fourth quarter. It is Djokovic up 2-1 on Zverev in the men's semifinal at the U.S. Open. It is 1-1 in the fourth set. Canadian Felix Auger-Aliassime eliminated in straight sets in the other semi this afternoon. 2:00 tomorrow for Layla in the women's final. Blue Jays now down 6-3 in the bottom of the seventh against the Orioles. Blue Jays fought back to tie it, but now the Orioles still batting, and they've already scored 3 times in the bottom of the seventh. Canadian Derby tomorrow, that'll be around 7:50 at Century Mile. Nuge's horse, Infinite Patience, runs in the Northlands Distaff. That'll start around 6:15. Thanks to our guests tonight, Greg Peterson, Robertino Diodoro, Helen Kellesy, Eddie Steele, and Dave Campbell, who's also the producer of the show. Kellen Kennedy is your studio producer. My name's Reed. Enjoy the game tomorrow. Talk to you Monday. I'll just keep moving on.
Chad Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 Chad.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.